Welcome to the Local Spotlight Show here at WJBM Studios in Jerseyville, Illinois, the voice of the Tri-County. Today I have a very interesting young man with me today, Todd Steinacher. And actually, Todd and I have connections. We go back away through his uncle and Jim Ducey, who and his mom, Liz Ducey from Hardin, Illinois, knew him down in Gridiron Acres. And Todd is a CCA, Certified Crop Advisor. Todd, welcome to the show.
Yeah, appreciate the opportunity.
Yeah, glad to have you. Now, Todd, you're a young guy, right? But you're married, right? And you have a family?
Yeah, so not overly young anymore, probably. Mm-hmm. Just turned 40.
You're still young.
Yeah, okay, compared to some others, I guess. But, you know, my wife and I got married in 2020, actually the weekend the country shut down. And we just had our first daughter about a year and a half ago, JoJo.
So JoJo.
We're exploring the family and learning different things, and I'm taking on a dad role.
Now, it had to be tough getting married in 2020, right? The COVID thing going
on? Yeah, so literally the weekend that we were getting married was the weekend that the state started shutting things down, and we had caterers calling us, letting us know, hey, if you need to reduce your number of heads and different things, they're going to be willing to work with us. But there are several folks, because we got married in Springfield, that were already canceling their spots. So it was very tough.
Yeah, because I remember, you know, that was tough. I remember a lot of people were very upset because they had their wedding scheduled and had to cancel them, and just threw everybody into a big loop. For sure.
Yeah. So, you know, there's a lot of people that had call in, so they couldn't make it from a health concern with everything going on. But, you know, we still shared a, you know, celebration of the folks that did show up. And it was probably one of the best events I've ever attended. So we were very blessed to be able to have it.
Great. So you're a crop advisor, certified crop advisor. Where'd you go to school?
So I actually did 2 years at Lincoln Land Community College in Springfield. After that, went up to WIU. That was Leatherneck, Western Illinois University.
Okay, great.
Finished off my bachelor's degree there in agronomy, and then I was actually in the industry for 3 or 4 years. And one of the agronomists that was kind of my mentor says, Todd, you got too many questions and not enough answers. You know, you keep asking me all these questions, which is great. He's like, you need to go to grad school.
Okay.
And he's like, just so happens I'm one of the professors as an adjunct on the online program at U of I. Never thought in the world I'd be going to grad school, but here I am taking my first class and absolutely loved it. I had 4 or 5 years to complete the process, so I did it while working full-time, and it was one of the greatest experiences of my life, so very much appreciated it.
Yeah. So did you grow up on a farm?
So yes and no. So my family was south of Carrollton on Woody Road. Joe Steinacher was my grandpa, so came from the farming side on that standpoint. And then my other grandpa was in Calhoun, Charlie Ducey.
Okay.
So I was always back and forth across the river quite often. So yeah.
You grew up on Woody Road.
Yeah.
Well, I have roots on Woody Road. My grandfather was born on Woody Road.
Okay.
And they had a farm. My great-great-grandfather had a farm on Woody Road.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nope.
Yeah. Love my time Woody Road. Good people came from Woody Road. I can
Absolutely.
Tell you that. Yes. Did you want to be a farmer, or did you just say, I'd rather be an advisor?
So I always knew, you know, agronomy and agriculture was a strong passion of mine. You know, earliest memories were raising pumpkins with my grandma in our garden. And we'd always take pumpkins on the square, sell what I could, and whatever was left over, we always donated to the churches and different things in town. So that's kind of where I got my...
You didn't go around smashing them on Halloween,
did you? No, definitely not.
Okay, good.
So that's where I kind of got my passion, growing crops, and then kind of also servicing others and giving them out, and entrepreneurial spirit type, you know. So it just kind of evolved, and when I got out of high school, I really didn't know what I wanted to do, so I followed my friends to Lincoln Land. I'm like, I really like this, and so... redesigned my classes so I could go into to agronomy and crop advising, and you know, I knew there was an opportunity to go home and farm full time, but the next best way to be engaged and help others is being an agronomist, and so I've dedicated last 20 years of my career being a good student to growing corn and soybeans and understanding the soil and just advising and networking with anybody in the industry that wants to visit with me.
You know, I can tell from talking with you a little bit, you have a great passion and love for growing, farming, etc. Tell me about that passion, you know, just because it just comes right out of you. You know, it's just very in a roar of passion.
Well,
about farming.
So they always say, if you like what you do, you never worked a day in your life.
Right.
And I'll be honest, what I do, I don't work.
Okay.
I get up every day, love what I do. I like going to cornfields and learning from them. I know it sounds completely silly, but you know, I thoroughly enjoy it, love what I do. But you know, some folks say, well, you work too much. Well, when you like what you do and you're building a cool PowerPoint or a spreadsheet or running numbers or, you know, putting soil thermometers in the soil and tracking it every couple hours, to me, that's fun.
Uh-huh.
You know, that's my hobby. You know, I don't go golfing every night or do other things. So that's my hobby.
Yeah. Well, I can relate to that to a little bit because that's kind of the way I am.
Okay.
Too. I don't golf. You know, I like working. I like doing things. I like being productive, I guess.
Same here.
You love farming or you love plants, you love growing. Did you work for any big companies, any corp or?
So
over, right now you're kind of going on your own. Right?
Correct. So over the years, you know, even coming out of high school, I tried to do as many internships and work study programs just to understand different companies. But you know, out of college, I worked in the GrowMark system for several years in central and in southeast Illinois. Worked for AgriGold as a regional agronomist, kind of covering central and in western Illinois. Had an opportunity to go be a corn product manager with Nutrien on the Dyna-Gro side, covering Illinois, Wisconsin, Iowa, Missouri. And you know, my last stint was you know, kind of a Illinois agronomist for Syngenta, and so you know, always still relating around growing corn, growing soybeans, profiling products, and understanding how we need to manage that across different soils, different environments to really maximize our profits.
Do our soils in this area, in the Tri-County area, do they differ quite a bit, the soils?
I would say, you know, to an extent, you know, Route 16, you know, kind of going across the state east to west is kind of where the second to last glacier ended. So really north of Route 16 has different soils than south of Route 16. South of Route 16, maybe a little bit more roll to it. They're more weathered, not as high organic matter compared to north. And a lot of times that's where we get some of that more productivity as we go north. But as we go closer to the river, then we get into the sands, and you know, the holding capacity for water and nutrients is a little bit more challenging. So whether you're north of Route 16, south of Route 16, or along the river with the sands, we got to manage
it's
that all
a little bit different.
It's all going to be a little different.
Yep. Explain a little bit about the glacier situation. I know the glaciers are big, you know, ice. What, I don't know, 100 feet deep, whatever it was, and it started melt. But how did that change the soil?
So, you know, if you think about pre-glacier, you know, Route 16 north, you know, the topography was kind of rolling, a lot of prairies, a lot of grass. And so if you think about grass that grows each year and dies off, grows and dies, it just builds up all that good organic matter and material. And then, you know, there's a lot of trees. So when that glacier came down through there, it grinded it up, you know, into little bitty particles, ground up the trees, ground up the rocks, ground up all the prairies. And then so when it receded.
And what was the timeline there? How many years? How many thousands of years?
I wouldn't even want to guess.
Okay, but a long time.
Absolutely. Yeah. It was geological time. So that takes a long time to make all that happen. And we're still seeing the remnants of it. Again, you know, most of my career has been on Route 16. I can remember my professors at Lincolnland always referencing Route 16, Route 16. Well, out of college, I worked in Litchfield, so half my accounts were north of Route 16, half were south of Route 16. And yes, there is a polar difference on how we manage things, and we got to have different perspective of how we manage it, manage the crop, manage our nitrogen, manage everything associated to it.
What would you say right now, is the status of the corn crop right now? It's being planted. What do you think about that?
So overall, you know, we had a very good run. I'll call it the early quarter of April. We were able to get out. Soils were dry. They're a little on the cool side. But I can tell you that, you know, it took a little bit for the crop to get out of the ground because a corn crop needs so much accumulated heat. And that's really going to be driven from how warm it is outside day and night. And so, you know, it takes a little bit of time for that process to happen. But once it initiated, you know, it took about 6-7 days for some of the crop to get out of the ground, which is probably longer than we'd like to see. However, it still came up pretty good. All the plant parts are looking, you know, good quality and should be able to take off and go. Now, the stuff that was planted within the last week or so, you know, we're still struggling with some of those GDUs. We dip down in this cool effect. We have the moisture, and that just slows the whole process down, because even though that corn seed, the bean seed, whatever that seed is, it doesn't have eyes. It just senses where heat goes. So if it doesn't have the heat, it just kind of stalls out and sits there, but the factory's still going. The lights are on. It's using energy, and there's only so much energy that can be there until it peters out and it dies off.
Yeah, that's such a game that farmers have to play, isn't it? Like when to plant and guess in the future. Like, should we do it now? Should we do it later? I mean, you want to get it done early, but then you go too early, and then you might have to replant. Right?
Absolutely. So the biggest thing is just paying attention to the environment and tracking things over time, trying different things. Hey, if it worked,
Where you come in.
Absolutely. Right. So if it worked a couple years ago on some small acres, let's start to implement it. And so we have to watch what our soil temperatures are. You know, if we go back to when my grandpa was farming, you know, they didn't plant corn until April 25th or later. And then so we had good trends of temperature. Now we're planting, you know, the last week of March, first week of April, and our soils just aren't quite warm enough yet. So we really got to watch that balance.
So what's the temperature that, as far as planting go, whether we're planting corn, flowers, or whatever, what's a good temperature that we want to be at?
Usually we try to shoot for about 50 degrees or greater. That's really when germination can take off and go. And then it's really when the soil becomes alive. All the microbial activity and releasing nutrients back to the soil, it really happens at that 50 degree mark. And as we get warm, if we get colder, again, you and I, if we're cold, we're gonna put our coat on, drink some coffee, and not really do much. And
right.
That's really what's happening to that seed as well as the soil. So once it warms up a little bit, we're going to take off and go.
So my wife, she likes planting a lot of flowers, you know, around the pool, around the house and everything. How can she know how does she measure the temperature of the ground? What's a good way to do that?
Yeah, so a soil temperature, you know, a lot of times we can go online and find a lot of resources for it. However, you know, just taking a basic thermometer that you'd honestly put in your turkey if you're cooking with. I've always used those in the past. I've used the digital ones. That you use when you're barbecuing. It's got the digital outread with four different ports, and I'd put them at surface, inch below, 2 inches below, and just kind of track how it's all going. So that's a good way to monitor your soil temperatures.
You know, we were talking a little bit earlier, and I'm not a farmer, right? But I've grown up in this area. I think, you know, one time you planted beans first, another time you planted corn first. What are they planting first now? Or just what happened there?
Yeah, so there came a point where we kept planting corn earlier and earlier, and the temperatures and moisture caused issues. And a corn plant never wants to have a bad day, because once the seed takes off, the root has to go a certain direction. Then what eventually becomes the shoot has to be. All these things have to work together. And if we have cool, wet soils, then we get issues that then delay emergence, which then doesn't give us a good marketable ear and hurts our yield. So instead of waiting, you know, soybean doesn't have all those parts that just have to work just right. And we found that by planting beans earlier, we don't have as much risk, and they can handle the environments. And we actually see higher yields by planting beans early, because we're starting photosynthesis that much sooner, and the whole process takes off. So, yes, there is risk associated in it, but the rewards outweigh the risk.
So you consider yourself a coach, right?
Yes.
I mean, that's, you're going into business for yourself, all right? And you are a crop coach. So if I'm a farmer, how do I get a hold of you? And, like, you know, what's the process? How do you do, I mean, how do you get money? How do you work in this?
Yeah, so for the most part, you know, I've been working with some folks in the last couple of years, you know, locally in the larger geography, as you said, as a coach, agronomic coach. They don't really need a full-time consultant or somebody on board where they have a full-time agronomist. They just need somebody kind of impartial to ask these little questions every once in a while that kind of help guide their direction on things. So my cell phone number, you know, that's where a lot of times folks can reach out to me. My website is probably getting ready to get launched here before too long.
Ah, yeah, great.
Everyacrematters.com, because every acre does matter, and how we manage it is important. So again, influencing those agronomic decisions as we go is how we're going to make things happen.
Yeah, and I noticed the hat you're wearing says it's A-C-H-E-R, acre, right? Explain that.
So I go back to, I think things have a very deep meaning in why we do what we do, or why. And so acre is like an acre of ground, but A-C-H-E-R is the last portion of Steinacher. And so I get my legacy of loving agronomy, crops, through my grandfather, through all his brothers, and my legacy of everything. So that's why that name is very important to me.
Yes. Now the question I have is, how are growers using ag practices in relation to climate?
So, you know, a lot of revolving around climate is really about,
I mean, there's a lot of things about climate this, yep. A lot of harass about climate, but
right, so in general, you know, our climate is always going to change, you know, temperatures and moisture, high and low, and there's all these things going to be cyclical all out throughout life. But for the most part, what a lot of people are looking for is how to get carbon out of the air.
Yeah.
And so a lot of the practices that...
Because we're putting it in with our vehicles. Driving.
Yep. So it's going out. How do we get it back in? One of the best ways to get carbon out of the air is crops, you know?
Yeah.
Photosynthesis. It is bringing carbon and making energy to have that output. So that is helpful. Trees, all these plants are what's taking you know, carbon out of the air. But some of the practices that growers are implementing to even take it a little step further is conservation tillage. It's using no-till versus tilling ground. It's adopting cover crops. And so the more, you know, the fall and spring, we've got green material out there that's living. It's still actively pulling all the carbon out of the air. And so really that's what I've been kind of working on the last couple years with the project in Green and Calhoun County through the Farm Bureau, was putting out cover crop demos, looking at different species, because not every cover crop is the same. We have to manage them differently. The hard thing is, as some of these carbon credit programs come available, there's opportunities for growers.
Talk about carbon credits. Explain what carbon credits is.
So there's a camp out here that is willing to have offsets. So if some industry is using too much carbon, well, then they can come buy carbon credits from a farmer or somebody else that offsets it. So by doing certain practices, you know, that they found through their research that it, you know, if a farmer can reduce their carbon footprint, well, then that credit can be sold to somebody else to reduce theirs. So it's still being built out. There's a lot of regulation that still has to be, you know, validated, and a lot of research going into it. But it is a space we are going to be in for quite some time.
Is that where you come in, where you can help farmers, like, do the right thing so they can sell those carbon credits?
So where I see my piece is, say, for example, helping growers understand conventional tillage versus no-till. Okay. How can we make that system work to where you're taking advantage of it, but you're not seeing a reduction in profitability and yields? No different than cover crops. I've seen folks utilize cover crops for these programs, and it's not managed right, and it's an absolute train wreck.
Okay.
And to where they lost yield, they lost production, and I'm never going to do that again. So they lost the opportunity. And so the trials I have going are trying to better understand, how do we agronomically manage these crops so these two systems can be at play? And so, you know, we could sit back and say, well, I want nothing to do with it. Well, somebody's going to get that revenue. So most growers probably need to sit back and say, okay, how can I manage this to where I get that revenue to improve my profitability? But hey, can I get better weed control out of it? Can I get better water holding capacity in my soils that's going to benefit me somewhere else? So what I try to do from an agronomic coach, how do I coach folks to make these decisions and stretch their thinking? Let's put these trials out on your own farms and fields versus relying on research data from, you know, 5 hours away.
Right.
Let's bring it home.
Yeah, great. Well, hey, we're going to have to wrap this up. Boy, that time went by fast. But anything you want to add to this, especially you need to tell people how to get a hold of you, your phone number and all that.
Yeah, so first and foremost, thanks for the opportunity to come on and visit and just kind of share my agronomic passion story. My cell phone number is probably the easiest way to get a hold of me, 217-248-6226. My website should be up here before too long. It is everyacre, acher matters.com. And just look forward to visiting with folks and engaging with anybody that wants to elevate their agronomic journey.
Yep, and those of you that, you know, you can always contact the station. I have the number too if you forget it or forget to write it down, or you hear about it and you want to get a hold of Todd Steinacker, we can help you. So thanks, Todd, for coming in.
Yeah, thank you so much for the opportunity.
Yes, and thanks everyone out there for listening. Have a great day or evening.